learn that I'm an addict. And after that, I don't know. I'm sitting up here and I'm looking around this room, and I'm am I talking loud enough? Okay. Anyway, I'm looking around this room and I'm thinking, these are addicts. I don't know about you, but this isn't how addicts look where I come from. I'm thinking, you know, the solution. 6 years ago, I came to a convention in Montreal. It was the very first convention here. I had about, it was before the first region. And I had about, I don't know, 5 months clean with a major attitude. I was in NA mostly to stay out of court, mostly to stay out of jail. And I got dragged here by a bunch of people, and I thought, well, that'd be really cool. And I don't even remember who the speakers were. I remember there were speakers, but I don't remember who they were. But I remembered thinking that it was like a little fairy tale dream, you know. Wow, if I could stay clean, then maybe, just maybe, someday I'll be able to stand up there and share my story. I stayed clean. And I get to stand up here and tell my story. It's funny because everything you told me 6 years ago at my first convention, I didn't believe. When you told me that I was special, I didn't believe you. When you told me that I could do it, I didn't believe you. When you told me that the steps were the solution, I didn't believe you. When you told me that we were all equal, I didn't believe you. When you told me that my higher power loved me, I thought you were really full of shit then. Somehow, though, something continued to tell me that there was just something you guys had in your eyes. There was something. There was something that made me believe you, even though I believe no one or nothing. I don't know. I got here, I was 27 years old, and I weighed 126 pounds. Which may not mean anything to you right now, except that it's about 60 pounds less than I weigh right now. My first gift in NA was someone gave me a pair of skeleton earrings. I couldn't complete a full sentence. It took me years to be able to sit in the same chair without having crossed my legs and moved my jaw. I was definitely voted the least likely to succeed. And like I said, I originally came here because I had no choice. I was going to die. And then as soon as I got my body healthy a little bit, it was because of court. And when court was done, it was because of my kid. And when my kid was okay, I always had an excuse to be here until I started working the steps. And then I realized I wanted to be here. I wanted what it is you guys have. I've always believed in a higher power. Maybe not. I was really fortunate. No one in my life had any idea or concept of what a God was, so I wasn't really given any warped ideas. I just didn't have any ideas. So I kind of always believed somewhere up here that there had to be somebody out there taking care of me. And when I got here, somebody asked me what my idea of my higher power was. Is it my imagination or are these things sounding funny? Okay. And I often say when I'm sharing, I do a lot of H&I work and stuff, and I often say when I'm sharing, my higher power was the guy or the girl or whoever it was that every single time my back was up against the wall, and that could mean anything. That could mean I could have been sitting in a jail cell, or I could have had a gun in any one of the many orifices in my body, or on and on and on, you know, when the truck was just about to go off the side of the road because I was too drunk to even see. et cetera, et cetera. And every time something like that happened, every time I landed in the hospital with another overdose, every time I did any of that shit, I would say, okay, God, if you're up there, just get me out of this one and I'll never do it again. Well, of course, as soon as I got out of that one, it was like, what a lucky break, and, you know, thank God you bailed me out, bud, and on and on and on, but of course it was never a God. And when I got clean, I realized that my higher power was the person who got me out of all those dams every time I asked. Got me in the doors of Narcotics Anonymous when I said that I couldn't walk another day. I came in with an attitude, eh? My sleeves were rolled up, and I had a pack of cigarettes. I have 27 tattoos, so you can imagine what I look like. And anybody who tried to come near me was told very politely to fuck up, to go away. I was the opposite here of, I thought you guys were all way too straight for me. I didn't know what I was doing here. It was, but there was something. You guys had something. It was that sparkle in your eye. Somebody took me by the wing and said, you know, maybe, just maybe, if you try changing your life a little bit, things will start to feel better. I know now what they were talking about was unmanageability. If I just stopped trying to keep in contact with my old friends, and if I just stopped trying to maintain on this fence, you know, I wanted so desperately to have one foot in and one foot out when I first got clean. I didn't want to use, but I didn't want to do what it took to stay clean. Like, I didn't want to stop hanging out with my old friends. I didn't want to stop hanging out downtown where the action was. Even if my excuse was going to lots of meetings, I was still downtown all day, every day. You know, how convenient. I didn't want to do those things. And somebody very nurturingly, very caringly told me that just maybe I should try not doing these things just to see if I could feel a little bit less unmanageable. And it worked. I did. I trusted that this person knew what they were talking about. And what started to happen as a result was I started to understand that I was powerless over this disease. And that, as it was said, it didn't matter how many meetings I went to, and it didn't matter how much I wanted for my old friends to be clean, just like I was, and it didn't matter how many meetings I went to, I was still going to be powerless over this disease. And that if I really wanted to stay clean, I needed to stop living an unmanageable lifestyle as I understood it back then, i.e. being one foot in, one foot out. I had some incredible things happen to me in my first year. I often say, though, I often hear people say that if they were, they would do anything not to go back using again, not to go back to using. I often say I would do anything not to go back and relive that first year. It was nuts. Like, it was nuts. It was go, 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 go all the time, and nothing I did was right, and if I crossed my shoelace the wrong way, it was time for the suicide prevention line. I mean, I was just nuts. Everything was God's fault. Everything. If I lost my keys, it was God's fault. He was trying to tell me something. But I also got a really good understanding of how this program works. Some really neat things happened to me in my first year. There was this guy who used to watch me. He'd been around the program for a little while, and at the time he had what I called a pretty good recovery, and he knew me. He was one of those guys when we all have somebody that they walk in the room and we know them. Like, we think their thoughts for them. We know everything they're going to think and say before they say it. And, well, this guy knew everything I thought and felt before I did it. And he used to watch me, and if he saw that I was starting to get a little bit uncomfortable, he'd come over and kind of lead me to where it was I needed to go. At this convention, or at a convention, the first convention I came to, he did that. All these people were getting together to go out for fellowship, and he kind of came over and he saw that I was going to get lost. And he kind of came over and said, "Come on, let's go, you know, and I'll buy you coffee." And he'd do that at meetings too. He'd see that I'd be about to leave and go home, because I still couldn't get up the courage to talk to a lot of you people. You were too straight. Of course, it was you. And he used to grab me and take me out for fellowship, making sure he brought me to these restaurants where everybody was going to be. I used to get really worried because he'd always be paying my coffee, and I used to say, like, you know. And he used to tell me, "Look, don't worry about it. When you've got a couple of years under your belt, you can always go and buy somebody else a coffee. You can always pass it on. When you've got a car, when you're well enough to have a license and drive a car, you can drive someone else around. It's not a big deal. Just always remember to pass it on." To me, that's how the program works. Today, I'm well enough to have a car, and I don't think twice about driving people around. Today, I have a higher power, and I try to give that away really freely. I give it away in my hugs, and I give it away in a lot of other ways. I give it away in service. I give it away in a lot of ways. But that's how this program works. It's by... And I asked the people that I give it to pass it on. This gentleman since died of an overdose. It didn't work for him. Doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just means it didn't work for him. And the stuff that I can do with that information, what my head's always done with stuff like that, is that I guess what I'm trying to say, the message I'm trying to say, is it's the message of recovery, not the messenger. He saved my life many, 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 many times. Many times when he saw I was going to leave a room to probably go get high, he would reroute me very gently and get me off to where I needed to be. You know? The messenger didn't quite understand it for himself, couldn't quite apply it to himself, but the message was the same. Work your steps. Go to meetings. I'll pass it on to you. You pass it on. He let me know when I was incapable of trusting anyone or anything that you people could be trusted. So today, that's still got to be the hardest thing for me, you know, is for trusting you people, trusting anything. We were driving down here, and the sign on the map says, auto route 20 or something. And every single time, it never fails, I'm driving in a strange city or whatever, and when I see the sign, I always say, "That's not it." You know, and I drive past it, and it's not until I'm lost that I realize, like, Karen, the sign, the map says Route 20, the sign says Route 20, but no, I don't even trust that. I don't trust the city and the signs. I don't trust the convention. I don't, nobody, you know. It's like, trusting is really hard for me to do. I was one of these people who then I understood step one, and then I skipped on to step three. I had a higher power when I came in. I believed that a God was going to help me out when I needed him. I believed that there was a higher power up there, so I skipped step two and went on to step three. I believed. I didn't need to come to believe. I had a higher power, so off I went to step three. Now, again, I know that it says in the book that many people skip over this step, but that didn't apply to me. I didn't trust it. Okay? So we went ahead and did step three. And I heard somewhere that if you're having problems with a step, it's probably because you didn't do the one before it. I don't want to say well enough, but well enough is what I mean. You probably didn't do it to the best of, you know, I probably didn't do it to the best of my ability. And that's why I'm having step problems with the next one. Well, I had problems with step three. Man, oh man, I had problems with step three. I didn't trust my God. I knew he was there, but I didn't trust him. I had no reason to believe that my higher power
would screw me around, like, because I never really was taught anything different, but I didn't trust them. And of course I didn't know this. You know, all I knew was that I couldn't turn my will and my life over to the power of God. As I understood, no matter how hard I wanted to, no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't do it. You know, I oftentimes I'll hear in meetings people saying, you know, I'll give it up, I'll take it back, give it up, take it back. Man, I couldn't even give it up. I remember sitting in a meeting one night, and somebody said to me, we were talking about turning our will and our lives over to the care of God, and I was talking about how unmanageable my life still got all the time, and somebody suggested that I go home and try to give up the unmanageability to my higher power. And I'm an action kind of person, so off I went, and I get home, and it was like, okay, God, you take care. All right, God, please take control. I couldn't do it. No way was I going to give up control. No. You know? So which step hadn't I done right? One, two, or three? I don't know. But my life was unmanageable, and I wasn't giving it up. So if I wasn't giving it up, but I wasn't doing it, God, that sounds so familiar, but I wasn't doing it right either, you know, that's pretty much the story of my life. But I tried, and I tried, and I tried, and I did it that way, and I didn't do it that way, and I did it, and I fought. And then I went ahead and wrote a fourth. I've learned a lot since I wrote that first fourth, but when I wrote that first fourth, I wrote, 500 pages. I understand now that what I did when I wrote my first fourth was really wrote out a really good step one. You know, I wasn't ready to do a fourth, a fearless moral inventory. I simply wasn't ready. Why? Because I couldn't trust my higher power. So how could I? It couldn't be fearless. Anyways, but I did it, and I wrote out a lot of garbage. And then I went to do my fifth. Again, someone suggested I do it with the program. I couldn't do that. I couldn't trust another human being. I wanted to so desperately, but I couldn't trust another human being. I'm fine state of affairs here, aren't I? I'm ready to do my fifth step. I don't trust God, I don't trust you, and I don't trust me. Okay? And I'm supposed to give this to another human being and a higher power. So as a result, I just didn't do it at all for about a year and a half. I'm in a meeting one day, and I'm all screwed up, and on the way in, I said to my higher power, okay, big guy, whatever it is I need to hear, you let me hear it. And the guy sitting next to me says, you're only a 6-year secret. Well, it was like, okay, we'll do a fifth step. So I went and did it with a priest. Figured that would be really safe. Not like I'm Catholic or anybody in my family's Catholic or whatever. I just thought that would be a safe place to do my fifth. It was better to do one than none at all. It was the worst thing I could have ever done. This gentleman, I'm sure he was just having a bad day or something, and maybe my trust issues were in there a little bit, but this guy sat and looked at his watch the whole time. It was like, you know, and when I finally finished, he said, have you ever considered going to Sex Compulsions Anonymous? Well, that was really non-judgmental. Needless to say, though, when I left the room, when I left this place, I had this burning desire to be with my higher power. I wanted to go back. I wanted to go back there. I wanted to go back to the church or the chapel or whatever it is that this place had, because I really needed to be with my God, but I couldn't. I couldn't go back and say, excuse me, I forgot something, you know? So I just stood in the bus stop, and I cried, and I cried. What happened was my fifth and my sixth happened to me right there in the bus stop. I didn't ask for them to happen. They just did. It's like, okay, God, I don't want this anymore. Take it. Okay, I don't want this anymore. Take it. The bus pulls up. I got on the bus. I wiped my face off, get to the back of the bus, and started all over again, crying. Okay, God, I don't want to be like this anymore. Take it. And I had a really good understanding then of my character defects. What happened shortly after that, though, was I had the opportunity to, I was asked to run God does this all the time to me, okay? I was asked to run a step two lecture at this recovery home. Ironic, yeah, seem to do step two, right? So I've got a few years clean. I've done up to a seventh. So piece of step two should be no piece of cake, okay? I've never had a panic attack in my life except this day. I was totally and completely humiliated. I don't want to say humiliated, that's the wrong word. Humbled is the right word. Embarrassed, humbled was the word. I was the professional and had my name tag on and nice clothes and high heel shoes, and I looked like the professional. And here was these people, all with like less than 28 days clean. And they taught me about step two. I went in there to give my professional step two lecture, and I ended up sitting down and saying, "You guys shoot, you tell me." Because I realized no matter how much I read, like I tried to read all this material on it and everything, and I realized that no matter how much I read and no matter how much I asked, until I had lived it, until I felt it, it didn't count. I couldn't teach it. I had no right to stand anywhere and say, "This is how you do step two." I had never lived it. I had never done it, and I could read about it till I was blue in the face. It didn't matter, because I mean, I was only giving you somebody else's opinion of what step two was. And of course, step two being a God step, right? I learned a few things that day about step two, but about all my steps. First of all, each and every step that I've done, I don't have a sponsor. Not because I don't want one, just because it has never worked out for me. Not for lack of trying. That's a whole other story in itself. But in any case, I've had to rely on conventions, specific speaker tapes that I really like that talk about the steps and the progress of recovery, and a few close friends to help me with my steps. I am not personally friends with, or hadn't been in the past personally friends with anybody who had a working knowledge of the 12 steps. We all kind of were stumbling along together. In my area, I happen to be one of the people with the most clean time, so it's like we kind of all stumbled together, you know? And so I read. I read DNA book. I read published literature. I read unpublished literature. Everything I could find on the steps before I went to work them. And what I learned this day was that the answers, I could read and read and read and read and read and read, and the answers are right there in front of me. I don't need to read. All I need is this piece of paper. It says it all right here. And I can read and read and read, and I can ask you till I'm blue in the face, but the answer is right here. And in step two, the answer was there all along. It says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I had a higher power, yeah, but it didn't say. It doesn't say here, you have a higher power, so move on to step three. It says we came to believe. Okay, that didn't apply to me, because I already believe. Wrong. We came to believe. For me, that means I came to believe that my higher power would take care of me. I had to learn to trust him. It didn't matter whether I believed him or not, that he was there, or he, or whoever. What mattered was that I didn't trust it. And if I didn't trust it, I certainly couldn't admit that there was any insanity in my life. And if I couldn't believe, or if I didn't believe that there was any insanity and I didn't trust a higher power, no wonder I couldn't do step three. So the lessons I learned were, number one, I had no right to skip over step two. And that once I had a higher power, I have to come to believe that he could restore me to sanity. I had to learn to trust my higher power before I could go on and try to ask him to take charge of my life, to take the care of my will and my life. A funny thing happened after I did this. Everything else that I never understood about the other steps fell into place. All of a sudden, I was able, when I was having a problem, to ask God for help. All of a sudden, I was able to ask God to take care of stuff for me, because that's what step three means for me today. If there's something that I can't find a solution to today, if there's a problem I'm having that I just can't take care of, or I don't have the answers to, I have to give it to him to take care of until the answer is revealed. And it will be revealed. But that's what step three is for me today. I'm not giving him my life and I'm a walking zombie with nothing in me except what you say. That's not why I got clean. No, I have to give it over to the care of my higher power. Just like when I left this afternoon to come here, I gave my children over to the care of the babysitter. I have to trust that babysitter is going to do the best possible job that they can do. That doesn't mean I handed my kids over for life. And it's the same with when I have to hand my life and my will over to the care of my higher power. I'm just asking him to take care of it because I can't right now. My step four, I went to a convention in Rhode Island and we went off to some person's house, some member that we had met. And this guy said, happened to be on the World Literature Committee, and we're rifling through all this unpublished literature. I know. Anyways, and we got, he hands me this step four that was never published, and it was like 7 pages long, and it was this big, and it talked about a moral inventory. It talked about fear, resentment, anger, and sex. I wrote 500 pages, never talked about sex, even though this priest said I should have sex with whatever is compulsive and anonymous. You know, and I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking, okay, this makes sense. How could I write 500 pages and forget to mention the most important, most scary things? Okay, this little 7-page, 4-step hit me right in the gut because it cut right to the chase. So, anyways, I knew I left the 4-step there, but I knew, you know. About 6 months later, I was coming to this convention, one of them, and I was coming to this convention, and on the way down, I had occasion to do my 5th step, my real 5th step, with another member at a convention. And it's my belief that that's what an Narcotics Anonymous 5th step should be done, with one of you here. Because when I needed to be filled up, we're fucking better to get it. Not in a chapel. I mean, that's okay too. Not with a judgmental priest looking at his watch. With you guys. You know? I understood that I needed to write out a step 8 and a step 9. I also understood that I couldn't do it yet. It was suggested to me by a member that I had a really hard time with my step 8 and 9. Not because I didn't want to do it, but because with the really emotional people in my life, I really wasn't sure about what amends I needed to make. I really wasn't sure. I really didn't know a lot of the time where I was in the wrong. So what I did, that's when someone suggested that I look at going off the beaten track of Narcotics Anonymous and maybe looking at some of my childhood stuff with a therapist. Now, I have an opinion about this. I hear a lot of extremes in meetings. I go to meetings a lot in my area, and I hear a lot of people talking about this issue and that issue and this treatment and that treatment and this therapist and that therapist. And then I go to other meetings, and on the other extreme, I hear people talking about there's no place for that in NA and you know, work the steps or die, and all the answers are here, and you know,
talk issues.
Excuse the language again, but anyways. I like to try and find a balance in my program today. And what I believe, and this is just my opinion, but I believe that I got clean to be happy. I got clean to do whatever it is I needed to do. And once I worked my first step and understood that I could have some of that power back to be whoever it is I needed to be and wanted to be, those are some of the bonuses of being clean. You know, I know people who got clean, has been clean for 10, 15 years, and it's like they're doing the same stuff they were doing 10, 15 years, but they're happy. And that's okay for them. It's not okay for me. I had done nothing. I mean, I robbed banks, for Christ's sake. So, I mean, I needed to learn new things. I'm a really, really big one on power, personal empowerment. And, I mean, I'm taking, I just started this idiot-proof crash course on mechanics. You know why? Because I'm really tired of mechanics telling me, blah, 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 that'll cost you $900. You know, I haven't got a clue. So rather than complain about it and worry about it, I figure as long as I'm going to have a car, I'm going to need to get it fixed. And as long as I'm going to need to get it fixed, I'm going to need to understand what's wrong. So I'm going to go take this course. Makes perfect sense to me. Okay? It's called personal empowerment because I do that. Part of my disease is I sit and complain about all the things I don't have. All the things that I didn't get. All the things that for me, you know, and me, and on and on and on. Well, with getting some of my power back, I can do whatever that takes. Now, if that means I need to take a mechanics course, that's really cool. It also means if I need to go to a therapist for some of my childhood issues, that's also really cool. Oftentimes, the two don't really have a lot to do with each other. I don't believe that the answers to, the answers to my mother beating me up as a little kid are in the steps. I don't believe that I need to deal with those issues to stay clean. Okay, I do believe that there comes a point in my recovery, just like wanting this mechanics course, getting tired of the same old shit, that I chose to do that. And that's for me where the line is in my recovery. And for me, I had a really hard time understanding where I owed amends to, like, my mother. You know, I couldn't ever get it straight. So someone suggested that I do this first. And it really helped. It really helped because once I'd done the therapy, then I could come back and have a clear understanding of where I owed my amends. That's that personal power stuff again. No, I like to have that power. I like to know, okay, let's do this. And my ninth step, I wrote 5 pages of people I needed to owe amends for, and I was willing to make amends to them all. But I didn't go out of my way. I didn't start running around like a lunatic trying to do amends. And I just let it happen is what happened. And what happened with me is slowly but surely incidences would happen. Some of them totally unconnected where I would know I was supposed to make an amends to somebody. I would go home. I would write like a lunatic this amends. And when I saw the person, I'd do the amends. And if I didn't see the person, sometimes I'd mail the amends. It depended on the situation. But I've done only 6 amends. I have a list of 5 pages. My higher power will put these amends in my way. I mean, some of them I will never make. Some of them, I mean, I dealt drugs for a long time. And, I mean, guilt when I came into the program was insane. Because, I mean, for years and years and years, I told people just like you how my drug of choice wasn't addictive. And I can't go back and make amends to all those people. Some of them I'll never see again, but I can do H&I work. That's my amends. I can go into institutions and tell you, yes, it is addictive, but and you don't need to die. So that's my amends. Quite some financial amends I'll never be able to make. But I can do community service work and volunteer work in the community. My step 10. God. Somebody told me, I like this, but for me, the definition of humility is finding out about myself what everybody else has known all along. I remember when I spoke, 4 years clean, realizing I was judgmental.
Like you guys didn't know, right?
I heard something the other night in a meeting. Somebody said, they didn't say I work it to the best of my ability. They said that really irks me. That thing. They said I work it to the best of my knowledge. And God, I like that. I don't know about you, but it took me almost 30 years to get here. And God knows if I wanted so desperately to have a magic wand when I got in this program that would make me all better and make me all better now. Not just make me all better, but make everybody else all better too. In the beginning, I needed to come here even when I was feeling good because that was dangerous too. But for the most part of my recovery, when I really need you guys the most is when things aren't going so good. And when things aren't going so good, I tend to kick into control mode. I can kick into super bitch mode. I can kick into isolation. And when I'm isolating, boy oh boy, I don't want you anywhere near me. And I don't hesitate to tell you so. Point is, I mean, there's been times and will be times in my recovery when I'm not such a nice person. I didn't come to these rooms because I was always going to be a nice person. And I need you guys the most when I'm not a nice person. When everything's going okay for me, I don't really need you guys. What I do need big time is for you to love me and accept me for the way that I am. And I think that, I do it. I see my friends do it. God, I see it all the time. But we'll sit in a meeting and Joe Blow or a friend will come in and they'll be super bits today. And we'll say, I've outgrown them. Or I'm screw her. I'm not, or screw him, you know. If they keep going the way they're going, they're going to relapse. You know, we can think of all the really less than nurturing things to say that we've always done. You know, and it's like, I need to like you the most when you are likable the least. I think that every single one of us came in here, I hear it all the time too, looking, desperately crying out for non-conditional love. And I mean, thank God when I first got clean, I had some people who could do that for me. Point is, we all need it. Very few of us can give it. Very few of us can ever give it. You know? And it's like, I've worked so hard at trying to be the type of person that doesn't do that anymore. I want so desperately, you know, when I snap into control mode, boy oh boy, I know how it feels to be on the other end of it. It feels like you're being judged. It feels judgmental. I know it feels judgmental here. When I'm trying to control your recovery, boy oh boy, it feels awful. You know, it doesn't feel awful for me. I'm fine with it. I know it's best for you anyway, so, you know, but I know how it feels on the other end of it. You know, and then, you know, when Joe Blow and Susie get in that relationship and we tell them, don't do it.
one's out using and the other one's just about ready to commit suicide. And what did we say?
We told you so.
God, I hate that. You know, I want to love you guys for who you are. I want to love you guys for where you're at. I want to love you guys for your lumps. So some of you are going to come in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out. You know, I'm you know, God has given me the opportunity to sponsor this woman that I just love so dearly. We go way back, friends for a long, long time, and she's coming up on her her 1 year in November, and she, you know, I've been a sponsor for two. I've been a friend for 20. No, it's not about, it's really not about what it is you're doing wrong or what it is you could be doing better. You know, it's about knowledge. And as long as I've got the knowledge, as long as you can give me some knowledge, as long as I can sit at the tables and I can hear what works for you, when it's my time to understand it, it'll work for me. You know, and what I need when I screw up and I you know, Joe and Susie, we don't need to hear, we told you so. I don't know about you, but I heard that all my life. I heard it from the cops. I heard it from the judges. I heard it from my mother. God, I heard it from everybody, you know. I need to hear, it's okay, you'll be all right. Or I need to hear, if you need me, just give me a call. Or I need to hear, you need a hug. But I don't need to hear, I told you so. And when it comes to step 10, today I know that I'm okay. Today I know that when I screw up, I can say, I'm sorry I screwed up. Sometimes it takes you to point out that I screwed up for me to be able to say, you're right, I'm sorry. But step 10, boy, what a freedom. You know? But, I don't know. I'll never get that right either. You know? Sometimes I'll screw up about screwing up about screwing up. I'll even screw up saying sorry about screwing up, and I still need for you to care about me. You know, I had somebody say to me a couple of weeks ago, I had a fight with a friend, and they said an argument with a friend, and it was a very high charged argument, and they said to me after, yeah, but you're a sponsor. What exactly does that mean? I'm recovered? You know, I don't know if anybody out there has found the magic pill so that I can be recovered. I'll gladly take it, guys. But I couldn't believe it when this person said, but you're a sponsor. Not, I wasn't her sponsor, but she said, but you're a sponsor. Oh. No? So step 10 is really important. Step 10 makes it easier for you guys to accept my mistakes. If I make it easy for you to say that hurt, if I make it easier for you to understand who I am by saying I'm sorry, then we'll all care about each other a lot more. And that's really important to me in these rooms. Because Narcotics Anonymous is a wonderful program, and the steps are wonderful steps, and it's a beautiful principle. But without any one of you, Narcotics Anonymous would not exist. Without the people. We can't have a meeting without each other. We're what makes the program. I don't like the feeling of walking into a meeting after just having a fight with somebody and both of us being there and that really old, familiar knot in my stomach. Anybody gone through that? I don't like that feeling. I don't need to feel like that in meetings. So I need to learn how to be okay with you. And I learned that with my step 10. Step 11 for me has meant a lot of things. I learned how to meditate. I didn't know how to meditate. But the answer was right in the step. I learned, I think, what God's will is for me. I'm doing it. And every time I say, if this is what I got clean for, it's enough, I'm doing God's will. If I can get up and smile this morning, if I can feel anything, that's God's will. I spent my whole entire life and most of my recovery trying to beat the pain. If I worked on this issue quick enough and fast enough, then, like, it, Can you relate? Like if I could do step four quick, and do it like 500 pages and do it really, you know, it, like long, then the pain won't catch up. It won't hurt so bad because I worked so hard. I don't want to beat the pain anymore because with the pain, I can feel joy. I've got three kids. And I got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and boy, oh boy, you know, they fall down off their bike. I have a 4-year-old, she just learned how to drive her 2-wheeler this year, and she drives around on this bike, and she keeps falling over, and she keeps crying again and again because she keeps skinning the same knee, and she's crying, and she's looking at me, and I'm saying to her, if it hurts, don't do it. Supposed to show you, I'm just not a recovering addict, what do I know? And she looks at me, and she keeps it up, and she keeps it up, and when she finally got it, when she finally got figured out how to ride the bike, the joy that this kid felt, I talk about a natural high. This went on for 2 days, the joy this kid felt over finally getting it. But yet I was telling her, if it hurts, don't do it. She knew. Instinctively, she knew. So yeah, it's going to hurt a little bit, but the joy is worth 10 times more than the hurt. And I want to feel joy today. More than anything, I want to feel joy today. And I believe that's my God's will for me. It always has been. I've never allowed myself to feel those kinds of feelings. And thank God I finally figured out that's His will for me. The other thing I found out just recently that's been really, really big for me in my recovery is that, I don't know if anybody can relate, but I'm always trying to get there. I don't know exactly where there is, but if I get it, I'll be okay. I'm just always trying to get there. If I work the steps, or if I finally get to speak at a convention, or if I finally get to own my own home, or get a degree, or whatever it is, when I get there, I'll be okay. And I finally figured out that it's not about getting there. There is dead. It's about the journey. It's about all the things I get to feel on the way. And whether or not I get a degree doesn't matter. It's how I feel. My God's will for me, you know, being a loving, caring God. I had a really hard week this week. And it was really painful, and there was a lot of things I did that I really felt guilty about. And when that stuff happens to me, I tend to get really down on myself. Like, I don't know if you guys can relate, but all the way here, my girlfriend and I are talking about how we really want to take it easy because we're both moms and we both have a lot of work to do during the day, and we finally get here, and the programming committee of this convention, I can't thank them enough. I mean, I would have been grateful just to have a bed to sleep in, and I got a king-size bed. You know, instead of a bathtub, I got a jacuzzi, you know, with a sun lamp. Man, oh man, 5 or 6 years ago when I was standing down there, like this is like, I don't know, it's a dream come true. And to me, it's not anything I've done. I'm just okay. My higher power has seen to it to take care of me. Even when I don't think I deserve it for myself, He says I do. And here, I usually take it. Usually take the baseball bat. You know, it's not just a nice room. I gotta have a jacuzzi. You know. Anyway, it takes that for me to see that my higher power still cares about me, even when sometimes I don't care about myself. Finally, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I've been working a 12 step in a sort, or passing on the message of recovery in a sort, since I've been clean. I finally figured out, though, for me, the 12 step means passing on the 12 steps. I can pass on the message of recovery in many, many, many different ways, and I will. But for me, the 12 step means passing on the 12 steps. And if you're new tonight, I didn't think think I could do it. I didn't think you could do it. I thought anybody with a year clean was God, and anybody with more than a year clean was lying. I thought that each and every one of you were just here for somebody else. I could not look around a room this size and see all these smiling, happy faces and believe for one second that each and every one of you was a recovering addict. I couldn't believe that. So I had to believe what I had to believe. But the point is, I got here. Because what I saw was the happiness. What I saw was the hugs. What I'm seeing tonight, when I look down and I see how happy everybody is to be here. When I see how happy everybody is to have each other here, that's what keeps me coming back. Because whatever it is you guys have, I want it. And I've always wanted it. And I will keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back because I just want it. It's better than death. Thanks.